and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, September 29th, 2023. I'm Nick Seabrook. Brianne is out sick this week. Thanks for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, I sat down with QP Ontario President Fred Hahn to discuss the recent momentum in the labor movement in Canada. Hahn last joined Rabble Radio in November of last year when QP Ontario's negotiations with the Doug Ford government were stalling. QP Ontario was demanding better wages and more support services, and the Ford government wasn't budging. Instead, Ford invoked the notwithstanding clause to force a contract on the union and effectively wipe away its bargaining rights. In the days that followed Hahn's interview on Rabble Radio, QP Ontario's 55,000 educational support workers, as well as some local chapters of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation and the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, all went on strike. In the end, Ford blinked, and labor won. Today, Hahn reflects on the impact of this historic labor action from last November, and why it's so important for the labor movement to be at the forefront of social justice issues, and what QP Ontario is focused on today. Here's my conversation with Fred. Take a listen. Fred Hahn, President of QP Ontario, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I'd like to just get started by first just talking about the current state of the labor movement. There seems to be a lot of momentum behind labor, both in Canada and the U.S. We're seeing this week the President of the United States visiting the United Auto Workers strike on the picket lines. The Writers Guild of America recently confirmed a contract. Unifor confirmed a major contract last week. And of course, we are also seeing a lot of activity in terms of social demonstrations and counter-protests on the part of unions in response to major issues affecting everyone. So first, I just wanted to ask you, Fred, do you feel that there's a very strong sense of momentum in the labor movement today? And where do you think that momentum is coming from?
Thanks for that. I think there is a renewed momentum in our movement, and I am so very proud to see it. I think there are many reasons for this renewed momentum. For me, one of the things that I think I feel like I can trace back to was last fall, when education workers in my union in QP were bargaining with the provincial government in a central bargaining model that requires the government and all of the school boards to be involved in a process for a central collective agreement with our members all across the province. That process was not going well. Our members were quite clear about the need to address their lack of fair pay, but also investments in services and the supports they provide. The Conservative government chose to draft legislation that issued, literally wrote a collective agreement that instituted deep concessions in that written collective agreement. It also overruled any local agreements that had already been bargained. It stopped local collective bargaining. It ordered all local collective agreements to automatically be renewed as they are. And it removed the right to strike from workers, and it threatened workers with fines of up to $4,000 a day. And it instituted and invoked the notwithstanding clause so that this legislation ostensibly could not effectively be challenged in court. And for many months prior to that, our leaders have been speaking directly one-on-one with workers in the sector across the province to actually ready them to stand up and fight back. And I'm proud to say that even though at the time it was deemed illegal, our members went on strike resisting this attempt to violate their rights. In so doing, they inspired other labor unions in Ontario to say that they wanted to come to their aid, because in our movement, we understand when there's an attack on one union, that same kind of attack is quite likely to come to other unions. There was, in fact, a motion passed by the executive board of the Ontario Federation of Labour and the heads of unions in the province of Ontario to call for a general strike, the first time that would have been called for in our province's history. And when the Ford Conservatives got word that this was, in fact, going to be announced, they withdrew and repealed the legislation that impacted our members in the quickest time ever in our country's history. I think that combined with crushing inflation, with the affordability crisis, with the reality that workers, whether they be workers in the private sector or workers in the public sector, have for the last decade or more bought into this way of thinking that goes like this. If you just take a little less, if you just do your part, if you just agree to, a little less, then, your jobs will be saved, the services will be saved. Particularly in the United States, what we're seeing from the auto workers there is after years, literally years of corporations threatening workers, we'll just move our plants to another country. You'll all be out of a job. We won't keep making automobiles in the United States of America. They have agreed over years to changes and then a full deletion of pension provisions. They've agreed to wage cuts. And at some point, we're seeing workers get to a place where it's like, well, I got nothing to lose here. You know, I can barely keep a roof over my family's head. Many of our members, not just in schools, this happens in social services, in universities, in hospitals, in healthcare. In healthcare, we have workers who have to have two and three jobs in order to just afford rent or afford their mortgages, afford buying food. We have governments, both south of the border and here, who are not only reluctant, but in fact negligent in putting forward any provisions that actually protect people against corporations who are doing their level best to increase their profits massively at our collective expense. And so thank goodness that our movement has remembered the very purpose that we were created for. The labor movement, unions were created to ensure that the collective voice of workers could be heard, that we could use the power of our collective action to actually be a buffer against capitalism. That is what this is, actually. People don't like to talk as much about capitalism as we perhaps ought to. People don't want to talk about working class people as much as we ought to. The truth of the matter is the members of my union, the members of auto workers unions, the members of electrical workers unions, of grocery store workers unions, we represent the working class, whether it be here, whether it be south of the border, whether it be in other countries around the world. And in representing the working class, it is our obligation to not only say the right words, but it is our obligation to do internal organizing, to build people's confidence that when we actually stand up, when we actually fight together, we can win.
Just on that note of organizing, we saw last week, September 20th, this so-called 1 million march for children, which alleged it was about parental rights, where we saw very anti-2S LGBTQIA+ messaging around that event. And in the days leading up to it and on the day of, we saw many unions, including yours, very prominently speaking out against that messaging and in support of the 2S LGBTQIA+ community. I just wanted to ask you, why was it so important for your union and for the labor movement to stand up that day and counter protest this event?
Well, let me start with a bit of a almost like an administrative answer. Our union, QP, our movement, the Canadian labor movement, is fundamentally a democratic movement. Workers decide, make decisions about what it is we should do. At the Canadian Labor Congress Convention last May, there were resolutions passed, including an emergency resolution passed unanimously on the floor of the convention that contained affiliates from every union in the country from coast to coast to coast, calling on the labor movement to be actively engaged to actually support and develop anti-hate flying squads and to support community efforts against the spread of hate against LGBTQ plus communities in our country. So we're doing what we're doing because our members told us to do it. The same thing happened in QP Ontario. We had a policy convention in May and several resolutions came forward from library workers and municipal workers, from school board workers who are in their workplaces, seeing these demonstrations outside by people spreading hate, who understand this makes their workplace a less safe workplace, and who want our union to respond. So that is very much one of the reasons why the labor movement was so actively engaged last week in counter protests against people who are spreading lies, misinformation, and hate in our communities. But the truth of the matter is that whether or not those resolutions had passed, it's, in my view, and I think the view of many in our movement, our obligation to be engaged against hate. You see, we were just speaking about how corporations are making away like bandits. Their profits are going up by multiple billions of dollars a year, and yet you and I and our friends and neighbors and our families are finding it harder and harder to get along and get by. And those corporations would love nothing better than for us to be fighting with one another about gender or about sexual orientation or about race. They want to divide us from each other as workers because when we're busy fighting each other, we don't actually turn our attention where it is deserved on the Galen Westons and the banks and the massive corporations who are making away with profit. But it is also true that in unions, when we say we represent workers, we do. We represent them, yes, at work. It is our job to ensure we can better the material well-being of our members, their wages, their benefits, their working conditions. But we also care about our members as people who live in communities, particularly as a public sector union that provides services that we all rely on. Our members who work in schools also have kids in those schools. We care about our services not only because we provide them, but because we rely on them. And so when anyone tries to attack any part of public services upon which we all rely, it's our job, it's our obligation to be there. Particularly in this instance, there are an odious group of funders, many of them from the United States, frankly, who are long-time far-right activists, documented white supremacists, people who have tried for some time. I mean, this is not their first attempt either. They tried to whip up concerns about immigration some years ago. They stoked fears around Islamophobia. They have, they tried in the Yellow Vest movement. They tried in the convoy. They circulated lies about vaccinations and public health measures. They did all of this because their goal is to have our communities fight with one another and to have hate rip us apart. Their current target is the 2S LGBTQ plus communities. We know that they are using misinformation and outright lies to have some parents who are busy. These are people who are working two and three jobs. Many of them are newcomers to our country. Many of them experience racism on a daily basis. It's not difficult to get folks who are under enormous pressure, who are already experiencing discrimination for themselves and their families, to imagine that something nefarious might be happening in our schools, when in fact, nothing nefarious is happening. So what is happening today, it's essential that the labor movement be part of it. And I'm so proud that we are. Sorry, I'm giving you long answers, friend. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I really appreciate your passion on this issue. And I saw that, I believe you were on the ground in Ottawa last Wednesday. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your personal experience that day. Did you feel that the pro-love and acceptance side of the event, that you guys were winning, that you were the greater number? How was it on that day?
I've been an activist in my union for many years, and part of my role now is that I sit on our national executive board. I asked our national officers if we could have our entire national executive board attend this event, and this is an unusual request. Because we were in Ottawa because we had national executive board meetings. There are packed agendas, huge decisions we have to make on behalf of a union that has 720,000 members across the country. We often don't get through those agendas. What I am enormously proud of, and one of the ways that I'm answering your question is our side winning when the longtime leaders of our union who are straight say, of course we should be there. When they change the entire agenda and make sure that we can get everyone down there and get others, of course we're winning. Having participated in that event, I can say that at the very least, we matched their numbers. And I think it's important to recognize that the other side, these people who are professional hate mongers, spent months and months trying to organize this event. Community groups spent a month or so trying to organize in response, and the labor movement literally turned its attention to it on Friday. And so people showed up, and that makes me enormously proud, but it also shows me what I know to be true. If we think about this in our hearts, there are some loud, a few small, loud voices here, a small group of people. Most of us understand that the kind of country we want to live in, the kind of communities we want to build are inclusive, are safe for everyone. So I think that last Wednesday was a clear demonstration that while they will try to divide our communities will not be divided ultimately.
Now, you mentioned that there are these professional far-right hate mongers who organize events like these. That's one thing. But then we also have politicians who are engaging with this rhetoric. I'm thinking of Doug Ford, Stephen Lecce. Both have voiced support or indicated that they would support policies like what we saw this summer in Saskatchewan, in New Brunswick, where those provinces now require students under the age of 16 to get parental permission to have their correct pronouns used in schools, which are policies that could put these students at risk. We hope that every child comes home to a loving and accepting home, but we know that that's just not the case. And these children could be put at risk if they are forced to come out to their parents if they're not ready. And a question I had for you is, if Ontario does do what Doug Ford has indicated, has tested the waters, and tries to implement a policy like we just described in Brunswick and Saskatchewan, how would your union respond? How would your members respond?
Well, I do appreciate, and it's important for us to be clear here, that, for example, Premier Higgs in New Brunswick had his popularity rating falling. In fact, our union, CUPE, organized a province-wide strike that was across sectors. Municipal workers, healthcare workers, social service workers, and education workers all walked off the job together demanding better wages. And the government was forced to capitulate because there was massive public support for our members. And so this politician has his numbers falling. He's already been beaten once. And so what does he do? He decides he's going to start a culture war. He looks down south and sees, what are they doing down there, I guess? And he's now instituted legislation. That legislation is being challenged. It will ultimately fail because it is a violation of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The same thing is happening in Saskatchewan. That our premier in the province of Ontario, that the education minister actually said things that would allow parents who don't have the full information to imagine that anything like quote unquote indoctrination happens in our schools is absolutely odious and ridiculous. I would hope that our provincial government, being battered as they are with ministers, leaving, one a week for the last 3 weeks, having to reverse themselves on major policy decisions like their grab of the green belt, losing in court around Bill 124, I would hope that they would be smart enough to understand that it would be a massive mistake to try to initiate this kind of culture war in Ontario. I would hope they would see that not just our union, but the Ontario Federation of Labour clearly stands with 2S LGBTQ youth and communities, and that we will simply not stand idly by and allow our provincial government to follow suit in this ridiculous manner, trying to divide our communities. What specifically our union would do, I would say, you know, they better just watch out for our response. You know, people say we're liberal snowflakes. I'll just remind them winter is coming if they think they're going to go there.
That is a fantastic and very powerful line. And we've covered a lot of really great ground in this interview about the momentum of labor unions, the response to hate and to government policies. And in just the couple of minutes that we have left, I just wanted to ask you, Fred, where does the labor movement go from here? And what are your union's short-term priorities?
These are challenging days. We have a couple of strikes on in Ontario inside CUPE. We just settled a strike that was over 2 months long and one just began. The workers at TVO continue to be on strike. You know, I believe that we are going to continue to see this kind of labor action until employers and governments get the message that workers are simply not going settle for less any longer. You know, yesterday at Queen's Park, we saw, I think, easily 10,000 people show up to clearly say to the provincial government that they need to reverse track and stop privatizing our healthcare system. I certainly hope I'm going to do everything in my power and my role to help people feel the wind beneath our wings here, the wind at our backs, that we should push forward, not just being satisfied, you know, with the end of privatization in healthcare, for example, but we should be demanding that hospitals that have been closed reopen, that workers are actually paid appropriately in hospitals, that we end privatization in our healthcare system, for example, in long-term care, where our parents and grandparents are still seen as profit centers instead of people who built our communities, that we should be pushing to ensure that there's gender-affirming care in every community, that we push for our schools to be properly invested in, for kids with special needs to have proper supports. Like, there's a long list of things for us to do. And the more we win, the more we got to remember that when we actually fight together, we can win these things, not just for ourselves, for our neighbors, for our families, for our future.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Fred Hahn, for joining me today. Really appreciate it. Fantastic conversation. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for being patient with my long answers.
That was my conversation with Fred Hahn, president of CUPE Ontario. To catch up on the latest news from the labor movement, be sure to visit rabble.ca. And with that, let's review the top stories of the week on Rabble in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Let's dive in. This week in Canadian politics, the Speaker of the House of Commons, Anthony Rota, resigned in the wake of a scandal that saw a man who served with the Nazi Waffen-SS in World War II invited into the House of Commons and given a standing ovation. Moreover, however, Rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg explains that there are deeper issues here than one Nazi being invited into the House, namely, how alleged war criminals get into Canada in the first place. In the 1980s, the government of Conservative Prime Minister Brian Mulroney set up the Deschenes Commission to investigate war criminals in Canada. Nirenberg explains that the commission estimated that anywhere between a few hundred to a few thousand war criminals had emigrated into Canada, but that much of the details of how they entered the country was not released to the public. Now, B'nai B'rith Canada is calling on the government to release these records. In labor news, Rabble labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga reports that the Quebec labor coalition known as Le Front Commun is denouncing the provincial government for their move to cut bonuses to public sector workers, including nurses, educators, and social service workers. These unionized employees are in an ongoing labor dispute with the government. Le Front Commun released a statement saying, quote, "These bonuses represent thousands of dollars per year for thousands of people in healthcare, social services, and education. They count on these bonuses to do their groceries and pay their bills. The fact that the government is serving themselves by using these bonuses to get points at the negotiation table is unacceptable," end quote. The Front Commun held a rally in Montreal on September 23rd, with more rallies expected this coming weekend. In environmental news, 9 student unions across the country are joining forces to pressure big banks to divest themselves of fossil fuel investments and to respect indigenous sovereignty. Dubbed Change Course, this student union coalition represents 450,000 students, including those represented by the Canadian Federation of Students of Nova Scotia, the University of Toronto Students Union, and the University of Victoria Student Society. Some of these unions have gone so far as to vote to disallow sponsorship from banks, like the Royal Bank of Canada and the Bank of Montreal, and to evict them from their campuses. These students point out that these banks are the primary funders of fossil fuel projects like the Coastal GasLink and Trans Mountain pipelines, which cross through Indigenous territory without the consent of those Indigenous communities. Also on the site this week, as a part of our Rabble Rousers to Watch series of 2023, meet the folks over at Wondrous Tree Fellowship. Here's a clip of an organizer with the fellowship, Nancy Furness.
Hi, I'm Nancy Furness with Wondrous Tree Fellowship. Our group works hard through education, advocacy, and celebration to raise awareness and appreciation around all the wonderful things that trees do in our communities. I'm honored to be named a Rabble Rouser for 2023 and thank the Rabble readers for nominating me. To learn more about the work that Wondrous Tree Fellowship does, check out my interview on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nancy. And finally, tomorrow, Saturday, September 30th, is the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. I spoke with Carol McBride, president of the Native Women's Alliance of Canada, who talked about how far the journey towards reconciliation has come and what can still be done to further this cause. McBride said that she was shocked when the government of Manitoba this month made their refusal to search a Winnipeg landfill for the bodies of missing Indigenous women a part of their re-election campaign platform. McBride is also dismayed that the federal government's slow pace at implementing the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action. She said that despite this, however, she is still optimistic that progress is being made. She explained that the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation is for non-Indigenous people to learn about the history and experiences of Indigenous people, and she hopes that many Canadians take the opportunity to do that on this year's Day of National Remembrance. To access the full version of all of the stories we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you liked the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. And if you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. And thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Nick Seabrook. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
CJSF.